I've come to learn is that email is really just one of your best distribution channels for all of the content that you already have going on that you can repurpose in some way and deliver value within that channel. And so what I mean by that is the email is more of a container for like, okay, what stories are we telling already? And, you know, breaking it up in a way, kind of truncating it in a way that makes sense for an email audience where they can read through it and get some value out of it, but it's just enough for email.
Hey, welcome to the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast on the EdUp Experience Podcast Network.
This is a show dedicated to helping higher ed marketers tell better stories, create better content, and enroll more students. My name's John Azzoni. I'm the founder at Unveiled, and we're a video production company working specifically with college marketing teams to make it easy for them to scale up and even automate their student and alumni success stories through our subscription approach. And you can learn more about that at unveiled.tv, and that's UNVEILD.TV. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, go ahead and subscribe. We'd love to have you. And if you're wanting your college or university's content to resonate on a deeper emotional level with prospective students, with alumni, with parents, whatever, I want you to subscribe to my free newsletter. Every week I send out tips and insights on creating more emotionally resonant content, including examples and best practices from other institutions, articles and blog posts, that week's podcast episode, and much more. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. All right, let's get on with the show. My guest today is Jess Cook. Jess is the head of content and comms at Island and co-host of a very good podcast called That's Marketing Baby. So Jess, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. This is so exciting.
Yeah. So for super pumped to have you on, and I became aware of you maybe, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago from through a previous guest that was on our show, Justin Simon. Since then, I haven't told you this, but I will tell you in all honesty, you are my number one favorite follow on LinkedIn. In terms of just like every post of yours, I'm like, oh, that's so good. I'm like, I have so many of yours saved.
That's awesome.
So for people listening, you know, Jess comes from the B2B world. So outside of higher ed, this episode, we're going to talk a little more kind of from a B2B perspective. But I love following Jess on LinkedIn because everything like she talks about, I can just kind of translate into what we do in higher ed. And it's a very seamless transition. So super pumped to have you here.
That's awesome. So thankful to be here. You and I have been chatting for a while now. So this is really cool. Full circle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did pay for like a mentoring session with Jess. And so if you've gotten like mid funnel content from me, like a little more salesy, you can blame Jess.
That's my fault.
Yeah.
But it's working.
It's been working. Okay, cool. So tell us a little bit about Island, because I don't think my audience probably knows what that is.
Yeah, that's okay, because I didn't know what it was either. There are still days like, do I know what this is? So Island is the enterprise browser. And, you know, every day we go to work and most of us open up some sort of browser, Chrome or Edge or Mozilla. And, you know, we go about our work, but those browsers were meant for consumer usage. They were not meant for enterprise work. And because that's just kind of the way things went, our security teams and our IT teams have had to build a ton of infrastructure on top of those consumer browsers to make them safe, to make it so that the data doesn't leak out, you know, that's proprietary to your company, you know, to the open internet. And in doing so, it's slowed down a lot of our productivity, right? Like now we have to sign in to every little thing. Certain things don't work. Certain websites have to be blocked. We can't do all the things we want to do as quickly as we want to do them. Some of the applications we have to work with don't actually even use in the browser. So now there's another thing we have to like go to. So what Island does is it has all of that stuff built into it. So it is a browser built with the needs of the enterprise inside of it, all of the security, all of the productivity, kind of all of the things that, you know, big companies need mid and big, large size companies need to be productive and to be secure in today's day and age. So super fascinating company. We're building a category. They are the creators of the enterprise browser. There's some kind of starting to pop up around us now, which is great. That's a good sign. Like competition is actually a good thing. It means that it's a legitimate space. And so, yeah, that has been fun. I've been working to, I'm head of content and comms there. So building the category, creating educational content, thought leadership content. Why is this the best new route to go for enterprise work? What makes us different? All of that. So really, really exciting challenge.
Cool. And you've had a pretty illustrious career in content marketing. I know you've worked with McDonald's. That's the one that comes to mind, because I saw something that you posted about something that did or didn't work for McDonald's,
yes,
about calling the coffee like some premium coffee thing.
Yep.
And I was like, so tell me a little bit about like some of the bigger brands that you've worked with and in what capacity.
Yeah. So kind of the beginning of my career, the first 15 years of my career, I was a copywriter and a creative director on B2C brands, on the agency side. So worked for an arm of Leo Burnett, if anyone knows Leo Burnett, mm-hmm, and some smaller kind of digital agencies that got gobbled up by bigger digital agencies. But some of the brands I've worked on are McDonald's was one. I used to write the jokes on the Happy Meal boxes and all of the in-store signage and copy for billboards and all of that, which was really fun. Kellogg is another big one I've worked on. I had a number of accounts on Kellogg that I worked on. So Rice Krispies and Pop-Tarts and Eggo and Frosted Mini Wheats and, you know, the odd cereal that launched and then never went anywhere. And then they tried again. So lots of those.
Yeah.
And Kimberly-Clark was kind of the other big one. So did a lot for Cottonelle toilet paper, which was a lot of fun, as you can imagine. Kotex, some paper towel brands. So yeah, a lot of like consumer packaged goods stuff. But agency world is like crazy. It is great for young, hungry people who are like willing to put their entire life into work. And that was what I did for a long time. But you know, there came a point where for me, we were growing our family and the work-life balance just didn't make sense. So 2019 was actually when I made the jump to B2B. And I thought, you know, I have this skill set, this storytelling skill set that I've used on B2C brands. I would love to take that in-house somewhere in tech and kind of try my hand at that. Like take that same storytelling set of skills and like apply that to something more technical and something where typically the marketing is a little boring or dry. And like, what can we do to make it more fun and take some of the things that I've learned on cereal and toilet paper and apply it to software.
Yeah. Well, you're in the right spot on a higher ed podcast, which is wrought with boring academic, you know, a lot of, you know, what I talk about on the podcast and what my colleagues talk about is like, how do we revive higher ed and bring it more into like 2024, you know, and make it more relevant. And higher ed is historically just so slow moving with adapting to change and things like that. Excited to kind of help our audience today kind of brighten things up a little bit.
Absolutely. Definitely some transferable, kind of theories we can talk about.
For sure. So we're going to talk today mostly about email, marketing strategies, because that's one of the topics that, you know, you're well versed in. There's a really good episode on Jess's podcast, That's Marketing Baby, on email. I don't know what it's called or what episode number it was. I listened to it. I went on a vacation and like, that's how I relax, is like, I'd listen to like work stuff that I don't have time to listen to.
What's wrong with us? Why is that? That's crazy.
So there I was walking around South Haven and listening to how to spruce up my email newsletter. So that's a very good episode. So let's see. Tell us a little bit, like hone in on your experience with email marketing.
What's been kind of some of the ups and downs that you've experienced with various brands and things like that?
Yeah. So I think my experience with email comes because, like, as the content person, a lot of times it's like, you know, the email's content. So, like, hand that to content, right? Like, that they need to figure out what goes in there. And for a very long time, I was using email and creating net new content for that email. Like, what can we say in here? You know, we got to be able to say something new. And then, you know, kind of using it as like, oh, here's some links to, you know, some stuff they might be able to check out and call it a day, right? And what I've come to learn is that email is really just one of your best distribution channels for all of the content that you already have going on, that you can repurpose in some way, and deliver value within that channel. And so what I mean by that is, for, you know, just take an example at Island, just sent out a couple weeks ago, an email, a prospect newsletter. And, so this goes to anyone who's kind of raised their hand and said, like, I'm interested in learning more about Island or the enterprise browser kind of space. And, you know, back long ago, I would have taken that email and I would have tried to, you know, write something net new, or, you know, go interview someone, or, you know, talk and like, what should we put in this email? I'm not sure. Right. But now the email is more of a container for like, okay, what stories are we telling already? Right now we're talking about, you know, the enterprise browser is kind of the missing piece to your cloud journey. That's a big kind of narrative we have going on right now. So mm-hmm. we have some blog content about that, and I'm taking pieces of that blog content and I'm dropping it right into the email and, you know, breaking it up in a way, kind of truncating it in a way that makes sense for an email audience where they can read through it and get some value out of it, but it's just enough for email, right? I am going and grabbing a video clip that I dropped into social that did particularly well. And I'm teasing that out in the email and then, you know, having people drive to it on a page on our website. So they actually land on our website. But for me, the idea of email is like, if I can keep them in email as long as possible, and keep them reading and keep them interested, I've done my job, and I don't want to, this is not what I mean by it when I say it, I'll explain it. I don't want to waste my time writing a brand new email when I have all this great content already at my disposal that's going out on my blog, that's going out on social, that I can repurpose and use in a really smart way to tell the same stories I'm telling everywhere else and deliver that value in the email itself. So my time is much more well spent just kind of taking what I'm already saying elsewhere and using it in that email. And a lot of people get like, ooh, I don't know, are people going to get bored of what we're saying, right? And I find that like people, we as marketers, we get bored of what we're saying very quickly because we hear it all the time. We feel like we're saying the same things over and over. But usually when you're finally like just so sick of the message is when your audience is actually just starting to pick it up and understand that that's kind of what you stand for. So definitely don't be afraid to like take things you've already said and put them in an email for your audience and try to add value for them in that channel.
Yeah, I like what you said about the email being kind of a container for content, because if we're already creating a lot of content, it's a good place to just kind of collect all of that. And I find too, like with, I have a lot of fun with my email newsletter that goes out to, you know, I don't know, marketing directors and things like that at colleges. And I find, because I think like LinkedIn is like my primary channel, but it's not a very fun place. Like LinkedIn is just not very, it's just very serious, you know? For a while there was, LinkedIn had like LinkedIn stories where you could kind of just be a little more, you know, I don't know, down to earth. And I liked that. And I was bummed when they went away. But I find that the email is kind of, at least for me, kind of a playground to like put things in there that's maybe just a little more off the cuff, or like share a few videos that came across, you know, on like the recent one that went out was on like different strategies for like viral short form, you know, videos and stuff like that. Just more like, just kind of more like fluid kind of communications and just things that are on my mind, you know, that might be entertaining or whatever. I find email is a place where you can kind of be a little more fun. And I don't know. That's just been my experience, but I think that it lends itself to like a lot of different things. Not only just pointing out to other content, but also just making the email itself a fun experience.
Absolutely.
Quick break here to tell you about a thing that all the cool higher ed marketers are doing. They've all subscribed to the Higher Ed Storytellers Digest. It's my weekly email newsletter where I unpack practical tips, insights, and inspiration for creating more emotionally resonant content for their institutions. And guess what? I think you're cool, and I want you on the list. Past newsletters have featured stuff like the anatomy of viral content, what makes a piece of content spread like wildfire. Also, examples of really compelling user-generated video content coming out of other institutions and getting a lot of traction on YouTube. We've also talked about how emotional content isn't just being sappy all the time. There's a variety of emotions that your content can speak to that can inspire a prospective student to take the next step with your institution. And so we've unpacked that. We've shared exclusive mini podcast episodes and bonus content that you can't get anywhere else but the newsletter. We've shared workflow tips for using AI to aid in content creation, all kinds of stuff that we unpack in this newsletter. And on more than one occasion, I've treated my entire list to free Starbucks. I make no promises, but just saying, it's been done twice. You'll also stay up to date on the latest episodes from this podcast. So if email is a better way for you to subscribe to a podcast, this is the way. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. And when you sign up, you'll be given immediate access to all the previous editions of the newsletter so you can binge the various topics that we've touched on and links and resources we've shared, all that stuff. So do that. unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Okay, back to the show.
What are some key factors for you that make a successful marketing email? So share with us just kind of some high-level points about what are things that people should keep in mind?
Yeah, so I think maybe 5 to 8 years ago, the most important thing would have been the subject line. And we'll get to that. But the most important thing now is actually the from line. Who is your email coming from? And I know as someone who gets emails from my alma mater, go Western Michigan, go Broncos. They're always from, you know, the office of the dean, or they're from the Lee Honors College, or, you know, whatever, the alumni association. And I immediately... Sorry, Western, delete them. Because I already know what they're going to do. I already know, like in my mind, they're going to ask me for money.
Yeah.
When it comes from a person within the organization, it feels more personal. There's a bit more intrigue. Why is this person sending me something? Perhaps you've received emails from them in the past where they've not made an ask. And you're like, oh yeah, okay. I want to hear what's going on there. Right. So really, when you're looking at your email program, consider who it should come from. It should definitely come from a person, a good spokesperson for, you know, whatever the purpose of the email is, it should come from a good spokesperson for that purpose. And that person may not be the one writing the email, and that's okay. There may be some ghostwriting involved, and they'll want to review it to kind of make sure they feel good about putting their name on it. But the idea is that you're building trust through a person. Because, you know, people buy from people. They don't buy from an organization per se. So that's the first thing. Try to figure out who should it come from and really make it come from that person. Put their name right in the from. Put their picture at the bottom and their, you know, little fake signature, right? Like, do things to make it feel personal. That's a big one. Second, I think, would be the subject line. So something we were doing when I got to Island in the subject line was like the Island Insider, and then like, you know, the vertical bar, and then it would be like, here's everything you need to know about blah, 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 blah. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, but no one can actually even see past the vertical bar. So you have wasted that precious space on nothing. Right. And I think what you want to do in that subject line is really pique someone's curiosity. You want someone to be like, I have to know what this is about, right? So try to pique someone's curiosity. Something where it's like, hey, is this you? ? Is like, well, is it me? I don't know. I got to see, right? And obviously there's like a line where it's like, well, that feels clickbaity. I think the thing that you have to remember is that once someone gets inside the email, there had better be value or something to follow up what you've said in the subject line. So those are two really, really important pieces for me. I would say the third thing is, and this feels counterintuitive, but your PS at the very bottom. So because now your emails are coming from a person, it feels kind of nice and natural and personal to have a PS line, and that make that your call to action. Whatever you want someone to do, check out a new program or, hear an alumni story or whatever the case may be, see our new building on campus. That's where that should live. Just test it once or twice and see what happens. For whatever reason, that spot is ripe for clicking. Two other little pointers that I have, if we have time still, you think?
Oh, lots of time. Keep going.
Okay. So typically you'll put your logo at the very top of your email. And typically most companies will link that logo to just their homepage, right? Mm-hmm. Which is fine. But what if you're really trying to get someone to do something other than go to your homepage in that email? What if the focus of that email is X? So change up the link of where that logo goes. You'll be surprised to see how many people, it's shocking to me because I don't think I've ever, maybe I have and I just didn't realize it, but I did not realize how many people click on that top logo, have it take them where you want them to take their action.
Interesting.
And the final, I know. Try it.
I don't click on the people's logos for sure. But that's interesting. I mean, that's the perfect example of like, just because I don't do it doesn't mean, people, if you've ever run like Facebook ads, you'll learn real quick that people don't behave the way that you think they should.
Not at all. Yeah. And usually I'll go back into HubSpot and I'll look at email performance and it's always in the top three clicked things. It's so bizarre.
Weird.
So try that. And I would say final thing, and I feel like this is really important in B2B. I also feel it's really important in higher ed because I think, higher ed is pretty notoriously aggressive for, I know as an alumni, asking for money, but also pushing someone to want to enroll or learn more, right? And they have to. That's part of the business. But I would encourage people not to make an ask every time, because what you're really trying to do is build trust. And when you make an ask every time, the trust just diminishes. And so I would try to, deliver value, deliver value, deliver value, make an ask. Deliver value, make an ask, right? Really intersperse it so that one, it will increase your open rates. People won't always feel like, oh, they're just trying to get money from me again. They're just trying to get me to, come to their school, whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel so frustrating. And two, when you make the ask, now you've built some trust and someone's much more likely to say yes.
Yeah. And I think that, it's, so like in my newsletter, I have a little spot where it's just like, hey, if you're new here, here's what we do for video for colleges, and then a couple links and then onward, But I think that probably just becomes a pattern in people's minds where they were just they've seen it once, maybe they'll skip past it. They don't even consider it anymore. If you always have the same call to action at the bottom, it's kind of the bottom stops right before that call to action for them. It's I'm going to only consume the actual value here. But I imagine, you're saying, letting people get to the bottom, the actual bottom, and there hasn't been an ask. It's just, hey, this is free. This is just good value for you. That would make me want to open the next email. But then also if you're changing up that call to action and you're making it part of the part of the value or part of the content, and in some way it becomes perhaps, I'm just assuming, it becomes, you know, a section of the email that they go, okay, this is the next part of this email, and oh, it's an ask. But you know, it doesn't become like this, they just tune it out because it's just always
totally
there. It's always in the same spot, it's always the same color. It's, you know. But yeah, I'm consulting with myself here on my own my own newsletter. I'm like, I should do some things differently here, actually. As you're saying,
that's the thing with email. Like, man, you can test so much in email. I mean, subject line testing has been around forever. That's a good one. But just like, there's, you can play around with so many things and learn so much, you know, each time you send one. So like, you're not going to break anything. I think that's something people get worried about. Like, well, yeah, that's how we always do it. People are used to that. And it's like, no one actually cares. Like, just try it. See what you think. You might be so surprised at what happens. And then that will can start to be the way you always do it. Right.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to go back to the PS line too, because, you know, as I've studied copywriting, that is a consistent thing in like copywriting books, is using, or at least like direct response, like sales copy, is that PS line being super effective. And then as I look at, you know, some really successful like email marketers that I follow, they're very heavy on that PS line. And sometimes it's like multiple offers. It's like, PS, here's a thing. PSS, here's another thing. And sometimes I've seen people use it my friend Josh Cantrell, he does a lot of messaging for B2B companies, and he's really good email marketer as well. But sometimes he'll even just like use that PS line to sort of recap what the rest of the email said. It's kind of like, here's all this value. PS, just a reminder, here's what I want you to take away from this, even if it's already been stated up there. But it's just kind of like, and something about our eyes, like, go to the PS. Like, I always read everyone's PSs.
Yes. It's funny. The psychology of a PS is like, it feels like a secret. Like, if I don't read this, I'm going to miss something that feels additive, mm-hmm. or that like I can't live without. For whatever reason, our brains feel like that about a PS. And so a lot of people will like scroll a little faster, get down there. Oh, PS, right? It's a bizarre little hack, but it really works.
Yeah, for sure. So going back to the subject lines, like how do you recommend, how do you think about subject lines? You know, what would be kind of your top pointers about subject lines? And then how do you test that?
Yeah. So definitely, again, piquing curiosity, that's a big thing. And instilling urgency. I think there's something to be said about feeling like I need to open this right now and not waiting on it. And there are some subject lines that you can do that very well with. At Marpipe, so a couple of companies ago, I was at a company, and the software was testing for ad creative. So you would kind of put your, you know, all of your different elements in there, and it would make every possible version of your ad. It would put them all out on Facebook, and then you would know exactly why, which one was performing the best, because you had every possible, permutation, right? So you knew, you know, like the blue background with this headline and this image always wins. And so we were just constantly churning out like research, like testing results and interesting little tidbits about like, oh, yellow outperformed over here, and pictures of beaches do better, you know, win 70% of the time for travel companies. And like, so whenever we'd make research, we would try to make it, you know, that subject line very intriguing. And so I think the best one that we ever did was, and the email came from me as a person, right? So it was like, it was coming from a person, and the subject line was, I made this for you. And it was one of our research reports, right? And so one, it feels very personal. Two, it's very intriguing. What did you make for me? Three, I need to see what it is right now, right? So there's some urgency built in. There's some personalization built in. There's a lot of intrigue. And then when they got inside, they were like, oh, this is really cool information that I can now take and use to test my ads, right? It wasn't like, oh, she got me, you know? It was like, I was actually providing some value that they could use themselves. So I think when you can find a subject line that does that, but then also the content inside the email backs up what you've said, you've got a winner.
For sure. I hate the clickbaity subject lines. drives me nuts. Like, if you're trying to trick me into, you know, thinking, but if I open that email, I would be like, oh yeah, she did actually make this thing for me and it is very helpful, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That email did really, really well for us, as did that piece of content. I think too, like subjectline.com actually is a great resource. They have all kinds of pointers about like things you should try in your email subject lines. Things like odd numbers work way better than round ones. It feels more real. So like 7 tips for something is going to perform better than 5 tips for something for whatever reason. So
wait, just those are two odd numbers though.
Sorry, I mean not like a nice, okay, 7 or 10, right? Like,
right, okay, gotcha.
7 feels more realistic and is always going to perform better than 10. For even though 10 is more, 7 feels more realistic. So it's it has a lot of tips like that where you can just go and try that and test those out and see what happens.
Yeah, that's interesting because there's like a pricing sort of tip that I've heard too. You know, if you're B2B or B2C or whatever, it's if you put a round number, they're going to assume that that's just kind of like a blanket number. But if you put like some random number, like $93.26, people will subconsciously think that you've actually calculated the costs here. And this is an accurate number. This isn't just some number you pulled out of a hat.
There's some math been done there. Yeah.
Yeah. The math has been mathed here.
Yes, exactly.
So that's really interesting. And like, what are your feelings about emojis in the subject line?
I think if the audience likes them, do it. And when I was at MarPipe, we used emojis in the subject line all the time because we were emailing marketers. Marketers eat that stuff up. Like that is their love language, right? Like memes and emoji and like, you know, slang like that. That was our bread and butter at Island.
Yeah.
We have a very specific set of emojis we use, and we use them very sparingly because we're talking to an IT and security audience. They're not quite as tolerant of that. That's just not their thing, right? They're pretty serious. They don't really even like being marketed to. So like we're trying not to feel like, hey, it's the marketing person here, you know? So I think it just depends on your audience. If your, you know, potential student base feels like a group of people that would be that would like that, then yeah, give it a go. You can never go wrong testing something. I don't think.
For sure. And memes are, especially with the right audience, memes are really a powerful thing. The one I sent out an email yesterday, and it had at the very bottom, it was like people that are on my list are higher ed marketers. So at the very bottom, I just found this like I just kept getting this Mike Tyson meme in my thing because he's like gonna box Jake Paul and I can't stand Jake Paul.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know, if you know this week here's a something to parody or spoof or something this Jake Paul and Mike Tyson thing, and I put the clip of Mike Tyson with a contract. He says, "Sign the contract, big boy." He's got this like, he's got a shirt that says "Sign the contract" in a space for Jake's name.
That's so funny.
But like the funny thing was, like, I didn't think much of it. I was like, oh, it's like here's an idea. But like, and then most of the people that I notice, like with my emails, most things get clicked on at the top, and then it's very sharp drop off, like stuff at the bottom. So I always just kind of assume like, put the testy things like that I don't really care that much about at the bottom. But like that one got all the the majority of the clicks. Yeah. People went all the way down and were like, oh, a meme. Yeah. You know, I found that to be like, you know, including just moments of fun and entertainment. And I think especially like for a college, not even like making it, oh, let's put a meme of us saying something about enrollment season and trying to make a joke out of it or something like that. But what's just like something funny that you can like loosely connect to, you know, your college, but that's just a little bright spot in people's inbox.
Can I tell you, and I actually just connected this dot when you were talking, the two best performing memes that I've ever had at two different companies both included skeletons. And I think there's something, memes are like kind of a shorthand for like commiserating about something, I think, right? Like, this thing is annoying and here's like a picture of how it's annoying and like how we feel about it. Mm-hmm. So one of them was at Marpipe, and it was, you know, the skeleton on the bench, and it was, creative team waiting for the media plan. And that's like something creatives hate, right? Like, well, what ads are you going to make? Well, I don't know, because I don't have a media plan. So I don't know like what the size is. I don't even know what I'm doing. Don't know what kind of ads they are. Like, once you give me a media plan, I can work on something, right? And it feels like it takes months, and then you have like 2 days to make the ads, right? That's an insight that you can use to create a meme. And this meme, so we ran a campaign where we were testing memes to get newsletter signups, because we found out, here's another nice little thing about email. We found out at Marpipe that when someone had been on our email newsletter for between 3 and 4 months, they were 60% more likely to book a demo. So we spent a lot of money getting people onto the newsletter, because we knew it was a really nice quick path to book a demo. So we ran a bunch of ads that had memes, and that one always won. We could not find another meme that would do better than that. For whatever reason, it was like just this pain point that we really touched on, that people related to, that a lot of people related to, found funny, and wanted to learn more. So that was cool. At Lasso, which was the role I just left before I came to Island, Lasso is a platform for event production companies. So they have a tool that allows event production companies to schedule crew, you know, people who are like putting the stage together for the Rihanna concert, and like, you know, who's going to be there for lighting, and who's going to bring everything in, who's going to take everything out, where is all the gear going at the next Rihanna concert stop, like all of that logistical stuff can be done within Lasso. It was really, really interesting. One of the tools that was part of Lasso was shipping. So when you're shipping, you know, cameras and lights and gear and speakers, you have to know where it is in the country, and you have to know when it's coming back, because it's probably booked for another job to, you know, a week later, and you need to be able to turn it around. One of the kind of insights we found out was, you never know where the truck is. Like, you'll be waiting at the job, ready to go, 10 guys standing around, ready to get the stage together or the conference set up. And, you know, the truck is not here. And so the meme we put out was a skeleton pushing down the blinds, looking out the window. And it just said, they said the truck would be here. They said the truck was 10 minutes away, 45 minutes ago. And again, it like blew up. We used it like in everything multiple times, because people just couldn't get enough of it. So if you can find some really nice insights that like people can commiserate on that feel really universal, try testing them out. Try finding a meme that like illustrates that feeling or that pain point, and try testing it, see what happens.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Clearly waiting around for something is a huge pain point. So find out what people don't like to wait for in your audience.
I burst out laughing yesterday. My wife was like, what are you laughing at? It was a meme that it said marketing delivering leads to sales or something like that. And it was like this like train car pulling a porta potty down the track.
Yeah, so good.
It was just like, it was going so fast, but it was like,
we should be offended, like, but it's also very
got
funny.
I can just imagine like marketing, like, we got great leads for you, and they're just all trash.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that's so good. I think like 90% of like spousal communication, it happens through memes, you know. I think big parenting decisions are made through like sending, you know, this funny thing about about parenting that you should be doing differently, or that's annoying, totally, or funny thing like that. So it is a really powerful, like, just a way to relate to your audience.
Absolutely. And like a nice way to say like, we get you, right? Like, we have people on the inside who know exactly what you're going through. I think it's a really nice little signal for that, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something to play into, I think, you know, with alumni newsletters, or I guess especially, you know, like enrollment centered newsletters, is like, how can we say that we get you? You know, because if especially if I was enrolled, you know, if I was like coming out of high school or something, enrolling into college, like the school that I felt like understood me and my journey probably would win or have a leg up. You know, that's not the only deciding factor, but that definitely, like, my ears perk up when I hear an ad or any sort of communication that I feel like is spot on for what I'm dealing with.
Yes.
You know, right there. Like for instance, like I'll stop for the ads that immediate, like the Instagram ads in my reels or whatever. I mean, it's like every third video is someone trying to like come at the camera real fast and like get your attention or something. Like I always skip past the ones that are like, hey, digital marketers, or like, hey, video business owner, or like, or anything where it's like sensationalized, like where it's like they're like the camera, like zooms in real quick on them. And it's like, it looks like a gimmick to get me to stop scrolling.
I am obsessed with this one thing. It's like, yeah, nope.
Or worse, if they say stop scrolling, I scroll so hard. I'm like, I will not be told what to do. But if they can communicate in that first sentence that they understand a problem that I have, I can't really think of an example off the top of my head, but it's just something that is like, don't try to be sensationalizing or whatever. Just get real with me about, you know, hey, we know you have this problem. Here's how we fixed it with this one client or whatever like that. Like I'll stop for those. Or if it's like you know, some sort of like back massage product impulse buy, I will stop for those too.
Need all the help you can get there.
Yeah. And those things always take forever. Like, I don't know if you've ever impulse bought something off Instagram. They come like 3 months later.
Oh yeah. The gratification is so delayed.
Yeah. It's funny. And now I know that's just like drop shippers that are, like, it's routing through like Saudi Arabia or something like that. And
exactly.
Well, one thing I wanted to go back to was, the coming from a person, but not necessarily written by a person. And I think that would probably be a big sticking point for a lot of colleges to pick a person, instead of having it come from the school. So like, what would be like, how should you make that decision? Like who should be, I mean, like, how do you decide who's the face or the name of the college, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough decision. I mean, I think when I think about who, you know, I'm kind of going through this right now. We have our Island email comes from Island, and it's something I want to completely overhaul and rethink, and I want it to come from someone. And so, you know, my plan is that I want to kind of figure out, I want to write like a list of criteria, right? I want it to come from someone who is, you know, of high seniority at the company. So it feels very credible. I want it to come from someone who, you know, doesn't just understand the security side of the business, but also like the productivity and the user experience side of the business. Like, so I'm going to be making like a checklist for myself of like, what would I want this person to on paper look like, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll probably, that will help me really whittle down that list. We're not a big, big company. So there's probably only going to be a handful of folks that can kind of fit the bill. But, you know, I think you really have to understand who your audience is first before you decide who your spokesperson is. So who mm-hmm. is someone that your audience is going to relate to? And, you know, who's someone that feels like they could quickly build trust, right? Like if your audience is young college students, you're probably going to want someone that feels aspirational to them or near their age. Like they just kind of probably went through the same thing I went through not too long ago, right? So mm-hmm. I think these are things you kind of have to think about is like, who can be the face of my email that's going to build trust with my audience? And I think that's probably the biggest factor in trying to figure out who that is.
Yeah. And just as an anecdote, I don't actually, because I pick up on when someone it's coming from a person like Jake from Steak Farm or whatever, you know, and I don't actually need to know, like, you know, like a real live example is, you know, I had to set up a new account on Transistor, which is the podcast hosting platform I use. So they think I'm a new customer and they keep sending me all this on-ramping stuff. And it's coming from like James from Transistor or something. But one thing I noticed as you're saying that is like, I don't actually care who James is. I didn't go research who James is, if he's a real person, if he's, you know, I just assume he's some guy that works for Transistor and there's probably several of these guys, but he's just the guy that they picked. I mean, I think you have a lot more room for, you know, I think people just care a lot less than they're, you know, because that's another thing too, where it's like making videos for colleges. One of the things that is so hard for colleges to do is the voiceover can't be somebody, the voiceover can't be someone that didn't go to the school, you know, if we show an actor or something, it has to be. And this isn't for every college, and I'm sure there are a lot of colleges that I'm just thinking of a couple of colleges that I work for where we've had these discussions of like in my mind, nobody knows who that person is. They're just kind of playing a role. They're just kind of giving a vibe, you know, in the college's mind, they are very afraid of who's going to see this and pick it apart and stuff like that. And so I think there's that gap there of like the reality of how much people care about that stuff.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, so yeah, but for me, I just, as you were talking, I just noticed these James emails from Transistor. I'm like, yeah, I don't actually care who James is. But it does feel more personal than if it just came from a blanket Transistor podcasting email platform. I'm more likely to open it from coming from a person, because at least I feel like I can, if I respond, I'm responding.
There's
to
somebody
a person,
back there. Not... Yes. Yeah, exactly. And that's a funny thing I noticed at Marpipe when I made the transition and had the email come from me, was I started getting replies, you know, hey, I would love to know more about the test you talked about in this email. You know, can I talk to somebody at sales, right? So I would pass that to the sales team. Like, I think that is part of it. And I think people in their minds are like, yeah, there's people at this company, right? There's people there. They see a person rather than a company. And it just, I don't know, the trust level feels different when you're doing that.
Yeah, for sure. The reply factor. Yeah, I love when people reply to my email newsletters. It's like, it makes my whole week.
I know, it's the best.
You know, so yeah, there is a definite like leaning into that human element of like, this is a person, not a brand that's talking to you.
Yes.
You know, and you're encouraging conversation through email, if it makes sense to, I don't, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, cool. So the last quick question I had is, multiple personas in the same email. So this was a tough one. I've been in, you know, some email workshops where this question has been asked. How do you address personalization? We all know that personalization is important. It's all driven into us marketers that we need to be personalizing stuff. But like in reality, that's kind of hard. You know, you could personalize by major, I guess, if you're a college. But like if it's like alumni or something like that, that's a lot of separate lists, you know, to have separate alumni by major and things like that. What would be your advice? Is there a compromise, or is there something that people should definitely do instead?
Yeah. I think there are little things you can do to make it feel personal, but still be able to scale something like this. So when I was at Lasso, we had 10 different personas of people that were potential buyers of the product because it did so much in the event production company. Like the scheduler could be using it. The head of warehouse could be using it. The finance person could be using it, right? And any one of them could come to us at any time and want a demo and want more information. So we had to talk to all of them. And we had 4 people on our marketing team. Like, we couldn't feasibly create content for all of them. And so one of the ways that we did this was through email. We had multiple email lists that split everything out by job function. And typically what we do is like the same content, most of the same content was relevant to all of those people, right? Like how this product can help you transform the way that you do your work. But the subject line in the intro, like to get somebody into it and interested in it, were kind of the spots where we tried to personalize a bit. So I remember for one campaign specifically, we had 10 different subject lines and we had 10 different intro paragraphs. And those intro paragraphs really and subject lines hit on the specific pain points for that specific persona, right? And so it was to going back to this idea of like, you're speaking directly to me and the things that I experience in my job every day. That was what we were trying to do. And the open rates on those emails and the click-through rates on those emails were some of the highest we'd had in the entire time I'd been there. And I really attribute it to the fact that we just took, you know, an extra bit of time to really nail down what the beginning of that email needed to be to kind of hook someone in and make it feel like we're speaking specifically to your role and what you do. So yeah, I mean, I think splitting it out by major feels really interesting. Splitting it out by college even is like a little bit less of a, you don't have to cut it so deep. It's a little bit higher level. Could be really interesting. I will say, I get this feeling just from, this is based on like the myriad television commercials I've seen for universities, where they try to target everyone. Like we have all these majors. We've got science, we've got English, we've got, you know, people over here doing engineering stuff. And like there has to be at each university, like the top three, right, colleges that kind of are like the bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I would focus. I mean, if there's anything that I would take and I would say could apply from B2B directly to higher ed, it's this idea of like find one target and one channel and dominate there before you move on. So for instance, Western has an awesome aviation program. Like it's the best in the state. It's something that really sets them apart. And so that like if I were Western, that's where I would start, right? Like really talk about the aviation major. And while that might not be a huge like part of enrollment, it is a big differentiator. And then if someone else, you know, that maybe even isn't interested in aviation sees they have aviation, like what else do they have? They have aviation that's so different. Like they've got to have other really cool stuff, right? So I don't know. I would really lean into this idea of who are the couple of what are really like the either the colleges or the majors that like really stand out for you, whether the academics are really great, there's an awesome program, or it's super different from what everyone else offers. Like really lean into those heavy and get really good at selling that first before trying to move on and really open up like, oh, we've got all this stuff, right? Because when you try to sell to everybody, you sell to no one and
sell to no one.
That never works.
Cool. I love it. Yeah. That's, yeah, especially like a 30-second spot. It's like, it's just can be so high level, like so broad, yeah. Like, and then you get into like the cliche messaging of like, your journey starts here, you know, and it's like,
yes, you watch any college football game or basketball game and you see six of those. And I'm like, I cannot tell the difference between any of them. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's definitely a gap in higher education doing something really interesting and different. And opportunity cool. for a lot of people out there.
So where can, thank you for coming on, by the way. It's been a great conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
I want to just drop a plug for the That's Marketing Baby podcast. As I've mentioned thank a couple you. Times, it is a very, you know, for higher ed that want to get kind of an outside of, you want to get outside of the higher ed bubble, but you still want to get stuff that's like really relevant to the stuff that you're doing in marketing every, you know, Marcom day after day. That's a really good podcast. It's you and Susan. Is that her
name? Susan Winograd. Yeah. She and I were the entire marketing team at MarPipe, and we did the MarPipe podcast together. And then when we both left MarPipe, we were like, that was so much fun. We should start our own thing. And so that's Marketing Baby was born. And it's just the two of us kind of chatting it up on different marketing topics, and it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Love it. Where can people connect with you at, Jess?
LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. If you find me there, Jess Cook at Island, just drop me a line and say that you heard me here.
Tell him John sent you.
That's right. Tell him John sent me.
All right, cool. Thanks for listening. Three things I want to give you before you go. Number one, reminder to sign up for my free weekly newsletter all about creating content that resonates emotionally with your audience. And you can do that at unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Number two, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone. Share it with your team, your boss, your dog, whatever. And if you're not already subscribed, I'd love for you to do that. Number three, reach out to me. If you have comments, questions, you want to talk about a video project, whatever, my email is john@unveiled.tv. John is spelled J-O-H-N. Or follow me on LinkedIn. If you're searching for me, my last name is spelled A-Z-O-N-I. That's all for today, and I look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast. Thanks.